For over 6 years, Hank Thorpe hosted All of the Above Radio, the most intelligent, honest, and eclectic combo of music and talk that you never heard. But the more things change, the more things stay the same. Hank is back with a new version of the old scene. No more music, no more time constraints, but he still has great stories, great interviews, and more passion than a novel with Fabio on the cover. Once upon a time, Hank Thorpe was your bastion of good music, good talk, and full escapism. Now, Hank is your bastion for punchlines, passion, and perspective. Hank Thorpe, your former, present, and future favorite podcast host, presents all new, all different, but still, All of the Above.
Does anybody else remember in elementary school, they would call out attendance and you would inevitably, at the start of every year, hear this phrase: "She moved," or "He moved." Stick a pin in that. Welcome to all new, all different, all of the above. New version of the old scene. My name is Hank. Hey, how you doing? You can find me on, well, if you want to, you can find me on facebook.com/allofthe above radio. You can find me personally, Hank Thorpe. Hey, how you doing? H-A-N-K-T-H-O-R-P-E on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram at Hank Told You So or at Hank. Hey, how you doing? And I open this up to you every time we talk, but if you would like to open a dialogue with me over today's episode or any of the previous episodes I did in the last, we'll call it 7 or 8 weeks, allofthe above radio@gmail.com. So I remember as a kid, at the start of every year, your first day of school was probably with a new outfit or a new pair of shoes. And with that weird kind of, I don't want to be here, but I'm excited to be here. Did anybody else feel that way about the first day of, like, the first day of school? You have summer vacation, and you do what all the things your family wants to do, or you go to camp, or you do this, that, you do whatever. And then there's that week where you're getting ready to go back to school, and you have kind of this annoyed feeling, but you have kind of this excited feeling. And I think as an adult, it's very similar to when you go on vacation, to when you go on actual vacation, but you kind of have that, like, the day you're getting ready to go back, you kind of have that, like, man, vacation's over. This sucks. But you also are kind of excited to get back to your own bed and get back to your grocery shopping or your cooking routine or whatever it is. I wonder, I kind of feel like the childhood version of that is going back to school. But inevitably, first day of school, you show up, and the teacher is calling out roll. Jaquelin. No Jaquelin? And at some point, a whole bunch of people are there, but Jaquelin doesn't respond. And out of the corner of the room, somebody shouts out, "She moved." And I never really understood that as a kid. I was like, oh, they moved. Okay. And I never thought about it, but later on in life, and actually, the first time it hit home with me was when my really, at the time, good friend Aaron Murphy had to move. So Aaron Murphy was in the fourth grade. He was my closest friend. And then his father either took a new job or got promoted and they had to move from New Jersey to Nebraska. And then he moved from he moved from New Jersey to Toronto and then moved from Toronto to Indianapolis. Anyway, But I never put the two and two together when I was a little kid in elementary school. Every year, inevitably, there'd be one or two or sometimes three kids in your class that finished the year with you but did not start the new year with you because their parents got a new job or got a promotion in their job or whatever reason. Parents have to take their families and go somewhere else. I mean, we could throw in witness protection if you would like. You could throw in CPS if you would like. I mean, I could make it dark if I felt like it. But there's always that kid that leaves. And I never had the perspective of the kid that leaves. And nor did I ever have, obviously, the perspective of the parent who has to take them. And I remember fourth grade me, very sad. Aaron was my closest friend, and I didn't understand the concept of loss or disconnection. And I took it really hard. The day that I said goodbye to him, I cried. I was in the fourth grade. What do you want from me? Excuse me. And my mom, super sweet, put me on a plane. This is pre September 11th, 2001. Put me on a plane and sent me to Toronto to go visit him. Super good time. And actually, I think I went to visit him one more time in Indiana. Wherever it was I went to go visit him was the last time I went to visit him because they were a very conservative family. They weren't Mormon, but they were something of some level of like high religion and high moral fiber, quote unquote. And I brought a VHS tape of 4 hours of Beavis and Butthead with me. I feel as if that was the last time they wanted to see me ever again. I tend to think I helped teach them about life in that time I was there, because I brought my Super Nintendo with me and I brought Beavis and Butthead VHS tapes with me. Either that or I made them horribly sedentary, depraved humans. I don't know which. But I never thought about the perspective of the kid who moves, who is now leaving their friends, or the parent who is taking them away because in their quest to either A, follow their dream, or be a better provider for their family, you gotta go somewhere else. And there is forever something special to be said about parents who understand that this job will pay more, this will suck, but this will be better for us going forward. There is something special about that, because that's got to be really hard. We're going to hear about that in just a little bit. But there is something equally special about a parent that says, you know what? We have exactly what we need. I want my kids to be happy. We're going to hear about that also. So I'm about to step away and give you a pre-recorded interview. We're going to listen to this fantastic man speak. He's going to give us a whole bunch of perspective that I never had. You possibly have. But this was very new to me. And it was a very fun conversation. And it was really good. I very much appreciated the time he gave. Still do. So we'll listen to the interview. And then we'll come back and you and I will chat for a little bit longer. And then I will kick the door open for you to chat with me. All of the above radio at gmail.com or THEHRT3@gmail.com. Either way, start a dialogue. I've given you a lot of shows in this last 7 or 8 weeks. We have lots to discuss, so let's get to it. But first, the interview. Sit back, relax, enjoy. I will talk to you on the other side. So last week was the end of the NFL season, and like I tend to do whenever a team cleans house, I send a text to the person that is a fan, and this man that I know that I'm about to talk with is the biggest Minnesota Vikings fan that I know, and they had a cleaning of both GM and coach. So I sent a very clean, quiet text of, hey, what do you think of the house cleaning? And the answer I got from him is something that I wouldn't have expected, but I'm so looking forward to this perspective. I say hello to the son of a football coach. I say hello to Joby Leahy. How are you, sir?
Doing good, Hank. Glad to be here.
Thank you, thank you, thank you for being here. So, just being a fan, having been a fan, I never played football, and up to this point, I've never known anybody who was a coach other than the high school level, which I don't know that there is ever a person who gets fired from high school football. I think you just retire. So, but your father, once upon a time, he was a professional football coach, correct?
Correct, for the Vikings and for the Steelers. Oh, well, for the Vikings and the Bills. He played for the Steelers.
Okay, so this kicks open just a really fascinating hornet's nest, and actually, after you said it last week, then I heard a little bit more. I heard the Rich Eisen podcast. He went on a 12.5-minute rant. I watched the YouTube video on Joe Judge being fired and talked about the man who has kids. And he talked about the fact that he used to work alongside, Rich Eisen did, used to work alongside Steve Mariucci. And he said that the end of the NFL season was the worst day of his life because you just didn't know what was about to happen. That's where I tag you in. So, first and foremost, I guess we would say, what was it like for your father, the football coach, throughout the season? But then, what was it like for your father, the football coach, and then you as part of the family at the end?
Yeah, as the season goes on, the family is very aware of the job status. And taking my life and as an example, I had moved to 7 different states by third grade. And so basically kindergarten, first grade, second grade, third grade were all in different schools. And at the end of the football season, you know if you're going to get a better job or going to get a worse job. And so cheering at those games are a little bit more dogmatic than just simply going to the park, because the last thing that I wanted to do was to have to leave all my friends and make all new friends. And then I'd also get to, you know, hear my dad talk and hear my parents talk about what kind of mood was the coach in, what kind of mood was the athletic director in, what's your feel, what's your vibe. And all those things are just, you know, scary things you can't control and a real part of the coach family experience.
So, excuse me. First of all, wow. And you've been a man for how many years of your life? You meet new people, and details kind of get lost in the sauce the longer you know them. And I'm having a flashback to the first time I met you, and it was at my then-girlfriend, now-fiance's Easter party. And my good buddy, she is super excited. She has met a man. She hasn't said what the future is, but she knows there's a future there. And she brings you, very calm, quiet, slightly nervous you. We're talking back and forth, and you talked about having moved a whole bunch of different places. And the first thing you think is, oh, are you a military brat?
Nope.
No, son of a coach. So how old were you when you started to understand the vibe in the house when it got towards the end of the season?
I can, I I can vividly remember in kindergarten, I was living in Buffalo, and on April Fool's Day, I thought a clever April Fool's joke would be to tell all my friends that my dad got fired and that I'm moving. And my parents, I think, ended up getting like phone calls asking if we actually got fired, because 5-year-old me never remembered to tell my 5-year-old friends that that was an April Fool's joke. But it was so common that it was just, oh, something that's not true. Oh, dad's getting fired. Yeah, that was just the common, like, perception of what life was to me was, yep, you move every once in a while, every year, every football season.
Wow. And so it didn't even matter whether, so like you said, whether it was a better job or no job at all or a worse job. So there was, even just the thought of you moving became normal because the job would be better.
Mm-hmm. I can remember having conversations with my dad at the time. He was at a Division II college, and UCLA had called him up and flew him out for an interview. And I can remember just talking to the family about, are we going to move from Virginia to California? And I can remember the question that I asked was, the Jordans with the patent leather and the, you could put like different laces in them.
Yep.
And I can remember like the Carolina blue, like streaks on the bottom of the soles.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember asking my dad, if we got the UCLA job, could I get this pair of Jordans at the new school? Because that would make me instantly the coolest person at the school in my head. And that was the difference in my like middle school brain between a better job and a worse job. But our family was just really happy at this small college in Virginia. And so my dad decided to stay there for not just his career, but just to, you know, keep the family happy with three kids and a high school that everybody loved.
Okay.
And so that's what we did.
And that's where you spent the larger bulk of your growing up life, correct?
Yeah, from third grade to college.
Okay. So what did that stability feel like to you?
I mean, that was amazing. And so my dad had just gone from the, you know, the Buffalo Bills to a Division II college in Virginia. And like after a few years, after like 2 or 3 years, my dad made my oldest sister, who was a freshman in high school, a promise that she could finish her high school career there. And she loved it because we loved it. Our family, we as a kid, great place to grow up. And so after that happened, my older brother got the same promise, and then I got the same promise. And so his professional career was no longer the driving force, and now just kind of making ends meet as a doing something you love.
As a and so quick to color within the lines about this conversation you guys are listening to on out on the airwaves. So I was a groomsman in this wedding. This man, I was part of the wedding party, so I was able to sit in on the rehearsal dinner. And I remember your father, as he's standing up there making his speech and thanking everybody for being there and speaking so beamingly of his children and his about-to-be daughter-in-law, I can picture your dad having these conversations and genuinely being heartfelt, and you as his kids fully trusting it, that this all feels accurate, correct?
Mm-hmm.
That's very cool. That is very cool that your dad, he had that moment where he said to all of you, hey, we're staying, trust me, we're good. So
yeah.
So let me ask an awful question, I suppose. And once again, as a sports fan, I'm not one of those beer muscle sports fans anymore where you say a whole lot of really foul stuff because you paid for your ticket. But in the city of Chicago, you're an NFC North / NFC Central guy, so you probably heard the story. But the high school football game where former Chicago Bears head coach Matt Nagy's son is playing?
Uh-huh.
And the fans are shouting fire Nagy. One, did that ever happen on a level where you noticed it? And two, How damning and crazy would that be if you were Matt Nagy's son to hear that?
Yeah, I mean, it comes with the territory. You're not being shocked by it anymore. And I also need to add that it's always the head coach. My dad was never a head coach, always a coordinator or an assistant, and they get, you know, a pittance of whatever the head coach gets.
Yeah.
But having for sale signs put into your yard was a common kind of joke that doesn't sit well with the wife or the mom of that house. It's literally telling you, even at the high school level, I've had cousins who are Texas high school coaches, and they've had that show up in their small knit community. So there is definitely, it's taken seriously, and unfortunately, you know, just like a regular job, there always does need to be changes and fresh blood brought in. But it's just one of those things that's half family, half business, and so there's no real great way to make that transition.
Hmm. Now, and this may or may not connect to your youth as being having been picked up and moved. This may or may not connect. Was it important to you personally, Joe Bilahi, son of a football coach, was it important to you shortly after you were married to have a house for you and your wife and pets to call home?
Yeah, I definitely put myself as a nester, somebody who enjoys you know, having that place to call home and to improve, and we're house hunting right now, so yeah, I definitely am drawn to that idea of making my own little nest in paradise and just improving it every day.
Now, did your dad ever tell you, we hear every so often, we hear athletes of yesteryear say, I wouldn't let my kids play football. This is mm-hmm. too dangerous. This is too this. This is too that. Did your father ever push you in either direction?
He pushed me away from football.
Okay.
As like a elementary school kid, I was the kid who definitely wanted to play Pop Warner. My dad started me a year late. We moved during my kindergarten year, so he held me back. Or he always calls it redshirting. So I was always a year older than the kids in my grade, and the kids that I'm competing against in sports. But he consistently pushed me away from football, especially as a kid. He says, once I'm in high school, I can make my own decisions. And one year I finally decided to play football instead of soccer during the fall times. And after one year I was done. I did not enjoy the contact. That was not my skill set. But yeah, I kind of wish I would have made myself, you know, work out, put on some weight, put on some muscle, and be a good football player. But I never got pushed, and I'm kind of glad after seeing all these CTE discussions now, and I didn't have my bell rung too many times.
Yeah, that is, and this is another one of those conversations that it's always going to have two sides to the coin, because my mother was one of those parents who pushed me so actively, both me and my brother. She pushed my brother into anything but football and pushed me into anything but football because she didn't want me to be hurt. And she was and one of my buddies who is going to be in my wedding, he is a football coach now, but he played all through high school, and he's had I think two knee surgeries and probably several concussions. Mm-hmm. But, and sometimes I'm a little annoyed that my mother pushed me so far into not playing, because like you said, it would have been a really interesting part of my life, because I hear my coworkers who are maybe about the same age or a little younger that played high school football that say, mm-hmm. there is no better feeling to be able to hit somebody. There is no better feeling than to be able to do this, this, or this. And I don't have that. I mean, I played baseball through high school, so I understand athletic competition. I understand teamwork. I played first base, so how athletic that is, let's leave that up to everybody to decide. But I played some level of athletic and was a quote-unquote gym class hero in high school. I was the best softball player and all of that. But I don't know what it was like to go through the triple sessions and the waters for the weak moments and the this all builds character type thing. Uh-huh. But there is the other side of it where my fiance, who grew up reading and going through debate club and going through theater and plays, she has said, I really wish my parents pushed me into something athletic because I didn't learn it or figure it out until I was like 24. And so there's just gonna be two sides of it no matter what.
Yeah.
But, and this is where my mother always says, I will gladly go to therapy for my son not having any concussions.
Wise mom.
Yeah. Now, and of course, this is where we spin it forward. If you decide that you and your lovely bride want kids, would you feel about the same way as your father and push away? Or would you push towards sports?
I think I would take the same approach that he had. I don't think there's any logic to a seventh grader playing and possibly going up against somebody who's twice his weight and one hit could, you know, change their life. But if you are like a freshman in high school and you understand what you're signing up for, then I would definitely support that. I do feel like the game is getting safer and safer, and there's by simple awareness avoiding the helmet-to-helmet collisions. So I would imagine that in 16 years or so, the game is going to be a safer game than we have today. But I would not necessarily require it or have my son earn my love through gladiator combat. But if he wants to improve, I'm sure my dad and I would love to give him every tip of the book to try to help his career.
Yeah, very true. That would... May this kid be born. May this kid choose to play sports. May this kid choose to play football. Mm-hmm. He or she will be the most prepared on the field. That's the
Absolutely.
Truth. Which is very cool.
My cousins are high school football coaches in Texas, and then their sons are now the quarterbacks and have won some state championships.
Ooh.
So whenever we get together for Christmas, it's always interesting to see my dad hold a little quarterback camp for my cousins and their kids just to start training up the next crop of quarterbacks.
That's got to be fun. Or that's got to be fun for the men.
It is, except for when I go out there as a 41-year-old and try to do the same throws that these little 17-year-olds are making, and it's not even close, and I'm like, man, that was a quick fall from my glory years of being able to chuck the rock.
I've heard about the tennis injury.
No longer competing at a high level for any sport.
Yeah.
I won my fantasy baseball championship last year.
It's a pandemic, man. Things are weird right now. We'll just blame the pandemic over and over again until sports comes fully back to normal.
That is my plan.
So, with my last moments here, I will give you, the diehard Minnesota Vikings fan, a chance to say, what is it that you would like them to hire? I mean, we've talked about the sadness that does come from cleaning house, but there is about to be new. Is there anything in particular that you want to see?
I know that they have, I just read this morning that there's the GM of football operations for the Philadelphia Eagles, who's a woman. And she started off in Canadian Football League and has been with the Eagles for the past 2 years, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I am wanting in the next ownership is just new ideas. So anybody who is analytically inclined, who has been seeing how football is changing, and I don't know what was going on behind Vikings closed doors. Some reporters are saying that the GM and the coach weren't necessarily talking, and you know, there's no way we can know that kind of stuff. But from the ownership side, I think you do need to find an owner and a head coach that are on the same page. So whoever that owner is, I'm not a big enough of a fan to really know anything about good ownership candidates. But I think just finding somebody who is able to work with the quarterback, and so whoever the head coach is, you can develop or get the most out of a quarterback. That's the team I want on our team.
Very nice. And it's kind of cool because since your dad coached at a couple of different spots, you can cheer for the Bills now too, can't you?
Sure, I can cheer for all kinds of teams, no matter what type of football we're watching. The USFL is coming back in the spring, and so I'm a Michigan Panthers again, because my dad coached for them as a little kid. So yeah, there's always somebody to root for.
That is beautiful. That we have pulled some silver linings out of the very early clouds, I suppose.
Yeah.
Well, Joby, I very much appreciate the time. Thank you so much for the perspective. That's what this show is all about. It's trying to open eyes to some new stuff. So I very much appreciate the time you gave.
Yeah, and looking forward to your wedding.
Yes, we will be seeing you. Let's see, we'll be seeing you in the end of Feb. You'll be getting that invitation soon enough, and well, who knows? Somewhere in between, also. Well, once you go, and of course, further down the road, your housewarming party when you guys move north of north of 380 and have the chickens on the ranch.
Sounds good to me.
Very good, man. Thank you for the time. And we return to the present day. Thank you to Joby Leahy one more time. That was fantastic. I have a few little bits of cleanup and then we'll keep moving. So, when I tell you that I was a groomsman in his wedding, I was a groomsman on the bride's side. So if we're doing this right, if we're saying this the right way, I was technically a bridesman. And in joking moments, I was technically a groomsmaid. Wait, no, bridesman. Yes, that's it. Anyway, so I got to stand on the bride's side for Joby's wedding. That is how we have come to grow, as in knowing each other. I have known and been friends with his wife. Oh, Lord. Since right around maybe late 2008, early 2009 sounds about right. She has been a very, very, very regular contributor to the previous days of All of the Above Radio. At some point, you know, it always comes back to All of the Above Radio. It just does. But she was once upon a time a very frequent contributor. If I tell you her name, you would instantly remember her. As a matter of fact, maybe I need to find a way to get her back on the air at some point. So that's a bit of a cleanup number one. And by the way, it was the first time I have stood on the bride's side for... Wait, actually, no, is it? Yes, it's the first time I have been a groomsman in a weddings where I was closer to the female, but they still put me on the dude's side. This wedding, Joby's wedding, was the first time I stood on the female side with a whole bunch of women. It was a whole bunch of very mind-bending moments, because I have been to, I say countless, which doesn't really exist, but it's gotta be in the upends of 25 or so weddings, and I've been a groomsman in no less than 10. And so I tend to think I'm a bit of a veteran of it. But gender roles throughout the times would have you putting square pegs in round holes. I'm sorry, square pegs in square holes. And when I was asked to be a groomsman, my first thought was, oh, I don't know Joby that well, but I wonder if I'm going to be going to his bachelor party. To which he said at the dinner, as I was asked, he said, oh, I don't really want to do much. It's probably just going to be a Sunday where we drink beer and watch football all day. And I just thought, yes, please. sign me up. And so little did I know that I was getting invited to the bachelorette party, which was more things that turned my head upside down. All new and all interesting. And a really great time was had, by the way, at the bachelorette party. And when I told my very conservative brother that I was in a groomsman on the bride's side, the first thing he said to me is, "Are you going to be wearing chiffon?" Oh, now bring it to the present day. I actually, Joby's wife, you may remember her as AJ. Joby's wife is actually a bridesmaid on my side. So I can look at AJ and say, "Hey, see what you started? You set a precedent." So I will be having two females on my side, and my right now fiance, soon to be wife, will have her gay sister and her dude friend. So that will be two people wearing men's clothes, for lack of a better word, on that side. We're very advanced here. Your friends at all new, all different, all of the above. We're very progressive people. Or at least we sure as heck try to be. Next bit of cleanup. I had mentioned in there that that my fiance had some kind of way or thought about her parents not instilling some level of athletic in her or not forcing her into something. Two things. One, the fact that she was in theater and debate and was a writer growing up, it has made her absolutely brilliant. And I would, and you know what? It's probably better that parents push their kids into some level of athletics so you learn cooperation, so that you learn discipline, so that you learn better athletic habits. But I will very quickly say, at least about my fiance, she picked it up later in life and took the ball and ran with it. But do I agree in general that parents should push their kids into some level of athletics? Yeah. But I will say this. Excuse me. I will say this. There was definitely times where I was annoyed with my mom for the fact that she pushed me into athletics. Because, let's just clear it up. As a kid, you kind of only do what you want to do. You don't really understand that you don't have a say. When you're a kid, unless you go out and get yourself a lemonade stand and make your own money, you really can't say a whole heck of a lot. So when my mother put me into taekwondo, I thought I wanted to do it, but I didn't really want to do it. This version of me would be far more able to take it on and would really love to do it. The version of me in the third grade who thought it was, I didn't think it was a joke, but it was more of like a cool kids hangout, and I didn't really take it seriously. Or when I played baseball, I loved baseball. I really did. But there were some days where you'd wake up on a Saturday morning and it was kind of cold out, you just didn't want to play. Man, it would have been so hilarious if my mom was just like, "Yeah, it's okay, you don't have to play." But no, she pushed me. And as much as a kid I was annoyed by that, I appreciate that now. So I can sit here and say Joby's point and my fiance's point are both super strong. Push a kid into athletics so that you learn a little bit of discipline, a little bit of better habits, so on and so on. But if you didn't learn it and you picked it up later, it's okay. It's okay. And I'll speak for me. I will tell you, those pictures of when you're not athletic in your younger days, when you're like that squatty, chubby child, they are embarrassing and funny to look at. I'm speaking purely for me right now. I actually saw a picture of myself, 20-year-old me, who, excuse me, was very far removed from high school baseball and was a very serious drinker and video gamer. Boy, those pictures are brutal. Maybe I'll put one of those up one day. And I'll put another picture up on at Hank Told You So on Instagram. I was a big boy. And I wasn't even drinking good beer. I have very good nostalgic memories of the food I was eating late at night. DP Dough and Rogan's Corner at Ithaca College. And thinking that, was it Joe's Italian Kitchen? Was like the pinnacle of fine dining. I digress. And final bit of cleanup from the interview with Joby. I just wanted to remind you all. I think I said at some point that it was the end of the NFL season. The end of the regular season. The end of the regular season usually is where coaches end up on the chopping block and general managers end up on the chopping block. Usually, the first domino to fall is either the GM, like the person who does player personnel, or the coach. Because then the players fall into place after that. And so I just wanted to say real quick, it's the end of the regular season. And so now we split into two different directions. So some of us, my fiance being one, still have a dog in the still have a horse in the race. My fiance is a is from outside of Kansas City, is a devout Kansas City Chiefs fan, and it sure is fun to watch that team. And so there are some people in the midst of all of this that still have a horse in the race, and it's still very exciting and fun to listen to sports talk radio because your team is kicking butt. And now in the other direction, there's people like me who are these colors don't run New York Giants fans, where, by the way, Joby, thank you for the perspective, knowing full well that Joe Judge is a human being with a wife and kids. You don't know when he's going to get hired again. You don't know how long it will be. You don't know if the stink of such a bad record and some kind of questionable and awkward press conferences, you don't know how long that will keep you out of the game. And for the sake of somebody wanting to have a livelihood, I absolutely get it. I absolutely, as a person, can say to Joe Judge, my heart goes out to you, and I hope you find employment soon, because I'm sure your family would appreciate it. I'm sure you would feel validated as a person again. Now, as a Giants fan, about halfway through the season, I was still banging the table for him to say, give him one more year with fully healthy players. And as the season wore on, I just said, you know what? It is time for a change. The New York Giants need a facelift. They need a full teardown. And thankfully, their god-awful general manager, Dave Gettleman, chose to retire because he knew he was about to be forced out. I have no positive thoughts to say about Dave Gettleman, by the way. I will tip my cap to Joe Judge and say good luck. You're only 40 years old. You're deep, deep sigh, 3 years younger than me. So you will find a job in the NFL again. To Dave Gettleman, I say congratulations for beating cancer. You have kids and grandkids. You're 70 or 71 years old. Go somewhere quiet and please don't be seen again. Live a fulfilling life. Be proud that you beat cancer, but get the holy hell away from the New York Giants franchise, please. back to the Kansas City Chiefs for a second. I will tell you, if you're one of those sports fans, oh, by the way, then there's a third person when the NFL regular season ends. There's a third person. There's a person that says, oh my God, we're just that much closer to either A, the sport that I care about, or no more football. There is a sector of the world that says, oh my God, football's almost over. I finally get my husband back. I finally get my wife back. I finally get somebody caring less about gambling and fantasy football and more about whatever else is going on. Yeah, there's those people too. And I'll be happy to admit, when football season, okay, when the NFL draft is over, I can kind of like pick my head up and be like, oh, there's other sports. The NFL does a great job of making themselves a 365 game, because I am on Bleacher Report every day looking at who the Giants have interviewed for their next head coaching position. And then shortly after that, I will be on Bleacher Report and on PFN and on the Draft Network looking at mock drafts to see what college players are being mocked to the Giants. It's really pathetic. And I love every second of it, and I will not trade it away. But as soon as the draft is over, I usually pick my head up and say, oh, baseball. Oh, yeah, we're getting towards hockey playoffs. All right. Cool. And I will say this. This year, we do get the, depending on what the pandemic does, we get the Winter Olympics, which you know what that means, ladies and gentlemen. Do you know what that means, ladies and gentlemen? We get curling on national broadcast television. You can't see me right now, but I have two fists in the air in celebration mode, looking like I just scored a touchdown, because curling is coming back. If you wanna write down a short list of things that make me sound like an absolute nerd, feel free to isolate that moment right there. But if you don't know, just watch. You too will be hypnotized. Really, you will be hypnotized by curling. But back to my thought about the Chiefs. If you're one of those sports fans who has a stadium bucket list, feel free to put Arrowhead on there. I have not been to MetLife Stadium, the new Giants Stadium. I went to Giants Stadium in the Meadowlands over and over again as a kid. All the way up until maybe like 2008 or 9, I think was the last time I went. And, I mean, it's the team of my life. It's the Giants' home, so it's going to be something special because it's the home of the Giants. But one of those stadiums that you need to go to catch the aura, to really feel what a city feels like, you go to Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City. It's a competitive bunch of fans, but it's a very welcoming bunch of fans. I have tailgated at Arrowhead. I have celebrated my fiance's happiness at Arrowhead. I have celebrated along with a whole bunch of people wearing red. And it's a lot of fun. It is a great stadium to go to. It is a great stadium in the regular season, and it's an even better stadium to go to in the playoffs. And funny enough, in the short time that I have adopted the Chiefs as my second team, as my AFC team, I have now been to the playoff game where Andrew Luck had his final game. And I was at the Chiefs playoff game where they were down to the Houston Texans and ended up roaring back and ran out of fireworks because they scored so much. Now, let me just make abundantly clear to those of you who have known me for a long time. I'm looking at the inside of my forearms right now to proverbially tell you, these colors don't run. I am New York Giants first and second, and I am Chiefs third. But I'm also smart enough to know. You want a happy household? You are cheering for the Chiefs every single second that they're not playing the Giants. Although, I'm gonna throw a little bit of a penalty flag on Patrick Mahomes for his crack on Daniel Jones a couple weeks ago. It was, I don't remember what game it was after at this point, but he was in a post-game interview, and he says to, I think it was maybe the ESPN broadcast, but I was listening to him, and he said, I thought he was going to pull a Daniel Jones when he got close to the end zone. And I'm in the kitchen washing dishes, and I just kind of drop my scrub daddy sponge, and I just said, man, Daniel Jones is home with a hurt neck minding his own business. You're the best quarterback in football, or at least right next to Aaron Rodgers and right next to Tom Brady. Why you gotta crack on Daniel Jones? Leave that mediocre freaking guy alone. I didn't say Daniel Jones didn't deserve to be ripped for running out of gas and tripping before he scored a touchdown. That was not my intention. But Patrick, to borrow from Chris Rock, Patrick Mahomes making fun of Daniel Jones, that's just mean. You could be Daniel Jones and make fun of Patrick Mahomes and be a hater, and that's okay, because sometimes the people with the least shit get to say the most shit, and sometimes the people with the most shit get to say the least shit. If you remember the All of the Above radio drinking game from several years ago, there was a call to drink anytime I mentioned Chris Rock. You're welcome. I could go on for a while if I were to keep chatting, but I will not. I will simply say, go Chiefs, and thank you to Joby Leahy. What a great bit of perspective. That's something I never would have thought of, and that was really very cool of him to take the time. I've got lots and lots of ideas for shows coming around the corner. I have a very special anniversary to talk to you about. I still have to give you my progress report for my 2021 goals, and I still have to give you the 2021 year in review. So before we've gotten too far into 2022, I have lots of material to present to you. And it's all coming up soon. So we will do this again soon. And soon after that, and soon after that, and soon after that. This has been All New, All Different, All of the Above. May there be a next time. I say till next time.